the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss some recent research that's challenged some traditional thinking around the potential for prussic acid poisoning from dried harvested forage sorghum. To have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by Dr. Shelby Gruss, who's a professor and forage extension specialist at Iowa State University. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Gruss, the research that you have done actually as part of your PhD program before you came to Iowa State, I think is really important for folks to understand because I think it challenges some widely held belief around what potential forage sorghum and potential dried forage sorghum may have in terms of causing a prussic acid poisoning issue. Before we dive into that topic itself, I guess, tell us a little more about yourself, your background, and your current role there at Iowa State.
Yeah, so a lot of this work came out of my PhD while I was working at Purdue University. We were working on the actual prussic acid-free sorghum line. I was in plant breeding and genetics at that time, but did some transitioning with that work, fell in love with forage production and forage management, and worked my way around a little bit, went to Michigan State University for a postdoc working more in perennial systems. And now I'm at Iowa State University. I'm their forage extension specialist. So anything forage related from hay, silage, pasture management, I cover the whole state here, but super excited to talk to you about some of this work that we did while I was at Purdue. We're hoping to explore it further while here at Iowa State as well, though.
The other thing I really like about your research is it came from a producer issue. In this case, you were working with extension specialists from Kansas State, where they actually had some producers have some fatalities from feeding dried forage sorghum hay. And that really prompted some of the work that you did.
Yeah. So my old major professor, Dr. Mitch Teinstra from Purdue, was from Kansas initially. And so they got a call from a producer that said, hey, I just killed some cattle and we sent it for testing and they said it was prussic acid. And I just don't believe that's the case because we all know that dry hay is safe. And so I got sent on a mission and to find the original source of that work. And I just couldn't find it. And probably happened earlier when just maybe technology wasn't there to do the right testing or something. But yeah, we could not find the original source of that work. So that prompted us to say, hey, what actually happens during the sun curing process and drying process?
So let's talk about that, because I think there are plenty of extension circulars out there that would say once forage sorghum has been cut and dried, the prussic acid potential causing compounds break down and dissipate as a gas. Your research would challenge that.
Yeah, so we decided we wanted to take a look at this and really get an idea. And we actually measured what's called durin, which is the precursor to prussic acid being released. So without durin, you don't have that prussic acid release. And so what we did was we took a leaf from a young plant because we wanted high levels of prussic acid potential. And we split it straight down the midrib so we could have two equivalent parts where we're thinking, okay, they should have similar levels of durin production. We split it in half and we weighed it fresh so that everything could be on the same basis. And one method was like the traditional, you freeze it, you grind it frozen, and then you extract durin. And the other method we did is we took that leaf, we put it in the greenhouse and let it sun cure. So we let it dry in the greenhouse for direct sunlight, because that's where most of the research says that's when it's going to break down, is during that drying process. And we dried it, ground it, and then extracted. And we found very similar levels of durin in that dried product versus that fresh product. So at that point, we were like, ooh, this could be very hot still, because if durin's there, there's that potential of releasing that prussic acid.
Talk a little more about that, because I think some folks may be saying, well, how long did you let it dry? How long was it in the greenhouse there?
So we had it in the greenhouse for a week. We probably over dried it. We were trying to be more careful because it was just the leaf we were drying down. It wasn't the whole plant or anything, but we didn't want to dry it in the ovens because we were thinking, okay, if it has something to do with sun curing, maybe if you don't get it fully dry, trying to mimic as much as hay production as we could in a more controlled setting, because we didn't want it to get rained on necessarily for this part of the trial. And so we split that leaf in half, put it in the greenhouse for that week, let it sit, and then we brought it and did the extractions on that. And so that was just looking at the drying process. And when we saw that there was no difference, we were kind of concerned, and we were thinking, okay, maybe it's more storage related. How long if you store it, maybe it's starting to break down during that storage process. And so we went back out and we did this with Kansas State, some of the colleagues out there, and we collected a bunch of sorghum samples. We tried to collect small plants because we wanted to see if we could see that dissipation over time. We collected samples from a week to 2 weeks to 1 month to 2 months, and we allowed them to be in the greenhouse. So we didn't have like humidity. So we still have some humidity happening, and it wouldn't be as controlled as like in a lab. And so sunlight could be hitting it and things like that. Kept it there for 2 months, and durin content was stable throughout that whole 2 months in those plant samples.
Yeah, I want you to state that again. After 2 months, durin content had not decreased significantly. Is that correct?
That is correct. Durin content did not decrease significantly at all during that 2 months. The only variation we saw was hybrid specific, which we would expect, but durin content was very stable through that 2 months at all four locations we collected samples from. And I think that was a total of eight different hybrids we looked at.
So I think the thing that's challenging a little bit is then as we think about what actually does cause that durin to be released, talk more about that and why that presents a challenge when it's fed to cattle.
Yeah, so that's something that I think potentially is why we thought durin was breaking down. So durin, for the plant to release hydrogen cyanide or prussic acid, it has to come in contact with the beta-glucosidase, which in this plant, it's called durinase. And so typically, when an animal comes and chews on the plant, durin and durinase are spatially segregated, but when it chews on it, they interact. And when they interact, that's when hydrogen cyanide or prussic acid is released. And so what we saw was durin was stable, but we wanted to see if hydrogen cyanide was actually being released as well, or prussic acid. I use them interchangeably a lot. And so our typical method for causing that release is freezing the tissue to cause the cells to rupture, and that'll cause that HCN release. And so we decided, okay, let's use these samples, the dried ground samples, at 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, and 2 months to see if hydrogen cyanide is being released. And so we use something very similar to what the Ward's at-home test does, is we use this piece of paper. It's called a Fiegel-Anger test, is the one we specifically used. And we tried to see how much HCN is being released, because if the darker the blue, the more hydrogen cyanide is being released. And what we saw was over time, less hydrogen cyanide was being released. And it was like, okay, so the plant's beta-glucosidase, I think, is becoming inactive during the drying and the storage time, but durin is not. And so we were like, okay, that could be potentially why we used to think HCN or prussic acid potential was decreasing over time, is because of this other molecule not actually, or this other enzyme, I should say, is not active anymore. And so it's this interaction that just may not be there anymore in the dried material. On the other hand of that is that we decided, okay, durin itself is not inherently dangerous. It's the prussic acid that's being released from durin. Is there something within the rumen microflora that could cause this release? And so we took rumen fluid, we introduced it to the dry samples, and we found that yes, there is, because we had hydrogen cyanide being released at very high levels within 15 minutes of it being introduced to the rumen fluid. And so overall, kind of what we saw was, yes, it was stable when it was dry. No, maybe the enzyme in the plant broke down and isn't working and being functional. But once it was introduced to the rumen fluid, the animal was able to release that hydrogen cyanide very, very quickly. And so we just don't think that hay is as safe as we originally thought. And interestingly enough, some work out of Australia, they had dried samples, dried sorghum samples. Granted, these were dried in an oven, they were stored in a lab, but durin was stable in those samples for over 10 years. And so we think in dried samples, it's pretty stable.
So one of the things that came to mind for me is, well, I haven't heard of many people having cattle loss due to prussic acid in hay. I hear of it sometimes in grazing, and we're well aware of that, and we pay attention to that. We warn folks, let your sorghum get at least 2 feet tall before you graze. Don't get below 10 inches. If you have a freeze, be real careful about regrowth. I guess help us understand where the higher risks aspects of this, and how should we be paying attention to this now that we have maybe a little more knowledge?
Yes. And so one of the things that I think has been occurring, like you mentioned, we really haven't heard of this very often. And ever since I've kind of been talking about this more, there's two things that kind of come to mind of why we haven't been hearing of this. Is one, we typically don't hay in situations where there would be high prussic acid potential. We're not haying when the plants are less than 2 feet tall. We're typically haying when they're more mature, potentially at the boot stage, when you get enough forage material to warrant driving the tractor across the field. And so typically when the hay is safe. But then also, I've been hearing about more of these situations where people just thought it was a fluke. If they did see an animal die, they were like, oh, yeah, that was a fluke. Maybe we just had extremely high levels of prussic acid, and so just not enough of it broke down while making hay. And so I think those two things have been factoring in, and then also the case of if they died, it was probably nitrates, and maybe we were blaming it on the wrong thing. But things that we do need to be concerned about when making hay is, unfortunately, when I think of timing of making hay, is drought situations that can exemplify prussic acid potential, and then frost as well. Now, granted, northern Midwest, it could be really hard to make dry hay of sorghum, sedan, and grass after a frost just because of the temperatures. But those are kind of the two time frames that I think of. And then also don't hay it when it's young, because that also could have high levels of durant accumulation, which would increase that hydrogen cyanide potential of the forage. And right now, with how much drought, unfortunately, a lot of states are facing, I'm a little concerned about this being an increased risk this year.
As we think about harvesting these forages late in the summer, oftentimes it occurs late summer or into the fall. How do we think about that in terms of management related to a frost or a freeze? Should we cut the hay before a freeze? Should we cut it after? Does it matter? What's your perspective on that?
I would, if you can, cut it before the freeze. That way, basically, the plant doesn't have time to respond from the freeze. So, the way I think about prussic acid potential and why it increases is it's thought to be a protectant or a stress response in some ways, of like, let's protect what I have. And so, like, young plants have it because it wants to plant protect that young, vulnerable material. But then drought and frost stresses the plant in another way. And so, I typically, if you're going into that fall and you're thinking about that harvest and when you should do it, is if you have a light frost and it doesn't kill the plant, you need to wait a week before you can harvest that plant. If you unfortunately have a frost at day five of that first frost, that restarts that week. And so it keeps rolling. After a killing frost, then you basically just wait out that week and you should be good to go. Because that plant is dead at this point. And so all those cells freezing has caused basically that durin and durinase to interact, which is releasing that hydrogen cyanide to the atmosphere. Hydrogen cyanide is super volatile, so it's not going to stick around on the plant. And so once that freezing action occurs, kills the whole plant. After you let that HCN basically go off or volatilize to the atmosphere, you should be safe to go. And so giving it that week would be a good amount of time for that plant to basically allow that to happen, and you should be okay after the killing frost.
As we think about drought-stressed plants, and again, I'm in a part of the state where we're in a severe drought right now. Does drought stress with a freeze change anything, or is that still the same basis?
That would be kind of the same basis in my eyes. The only other potential with that is a drought stressed plant before the frost, I would be concerned about harvesting for prussic acid potential. So maybe at waiting till that freeze kills the plant will be your safest option at that point, because it's a stressor, especially drought that has had nitrogen applied. I know we think about nitrates a lot with this, but it has been shown in the literature that a drought with a nitrogen application really increase prussic acid potential as well. So waiting, if you have that drought, you're going into the fall, you get that killing frost is going to be our best bet of reducing that prussic acid potential.
Tell us a little more about your research you did in your PhD program, because I think this content of durin in forage sorghum, and then you're working to select for varieties that don't have as much of that present or durin free. I guess help us understand a little about the biology. Why would this sorghum plant produce this durin, and is there any advantages for it as it thinks about resisting pests?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So this all of this works from that prussic acid free, I think is what the companies are calling it, or durin free is what I've always called it, because basically through our breeding efforts, we remove durin is the main aspect of it. But why was durin there in the first place? What was the point of it? Because plants don't just make something to make it. And so some more recent work that's come out is really trying to figure out why durin is there in the first place. And some of that is defense to pests and things like that. And so one of the aspects that we got to be thinking about is that. And so we did some work with fall armyworms and seeing how resistant or preferential fall army would be to the durin free. And we did see preference towards the durin free, but we also got to think about, when are we seeing these pests? Because typically prussic acid potential is high when the plant's young. And so if we're not seeing these pests till the plant's older, we're probably not going to see much of a difference. But another aspect of that is breaking disease cycles. And so one thing that we've been talking here in Iowa a lot is how do you break this corn rootworm cycle in silage production? And one recommendation is using forage sorghum. Corn rootworm can't feed on forage sorghum, at least northern corn rootworm or western cannot feed on forage sorghum roots. And that's because of that durin and prussic acid release. And so the durin free is a great strategy, I think, especially when we're going into like grazing systems, but it's not going to be the only thing we ever plant again, from what I can see. There's a lot of other mechanisms that is proposed for durin, such as like nitrogen mobilization. And then there could be some roles that are tissue specific, but there's a lot we're still learning on it. But from the work we did with the prussic acid free sorghum lines, it seems like it's going to be a really good option for especially for grazing.
One of the other things I think is important to understand is if you're harvesting this for silage, does that change your cautions or things you would do from a management standpoint?
So I think silage, especially well-made silage, we need to drop that pH, make it well, is probably our safest option. Well, I would say it actually is our safest option for hydrogen cyanide or prussic acid management. That chopping action is going to start breaking those cells down, but then also the drop in that pH. We've seen the data has shown that over time, durin is being broken down. I think initially within the first few weeks, it's about drops by about 50%, but then some work that's shown after 12 months, 80% of the durin's been broken down and hydrogen cyanide's been released. So silage really, especially well-made silage, is one of our safest options, especially if you have a prussic acid concern.
So as you mentioned, there's a lot of states dealing with drought, and just going to kind of go a little further with your comment about making silage. So oftentimes when we get into a drought stress situation, that's when we see more silage made, and we need a crop, we need something to feed cattle. Typically, we talk about, ensiling a product for at least 30 days before we open that up to make sure we have good stability and then begin to feed it. If someone's thinking about drought stress sorghum and putting that up for silage, what are some things maybe they need to pay attention to, or how would you coach them as they think about maybe potential prussic acid issues with that?
Yeah, so I think for me, silage, like I mentioned, is probably going to be our safest bet. One other aspect we need to be thinking about is nitrates as well, but silage is going to be helping both of those in the best cases. And if somebody was to come to me and say, hey, should I make hay or silage? I'd definitely recommend silage. There's things you can do before and after, I guess, in make the ensiling process, but my biggest things is trying to make it right. If you're gonna make like baelage or haylage, we have to make it good, making sure that pH drops, getting that moisture content to the right levels is gonna be important for this to work right. And so one thing you can do if you think like I had super high levels of prussic acid potential is you can send in a sample to see what that risk is at after the silage process and before you're feeding out. Another aspect is the longer it sits, is if you can feed something else, the more prussic acid's going to break down while it's sitting in that pile or in that bag or in that baelage situation. So those are kind of the things I think are going to be key to making safe silage for sorghum, but I would definitely recommend silage over grazing or hay if we are concerned about prussic acid.
Dr. Gress, what else would you like producers to know about this topic based on the research you've done and the stories you've heard working with folks who've come to you and said, hey, I actually did have an issue with this?
So I think we need to be thinking about one, testing and making sure that it is safe, especially in these drought situations. And one thing that I've been also kind of talking about with people is ensuring the lab that gets it adds an external beta glucosidase to the sample. And I know that seems like a much, but we've seen in the work research is that if we don't add this external beta glucosidase for when we're making these measurements, that basically we don't get all of the dhurrin evolved. And so our hydrogen cyanide potential is not really registering what could be there. And so I know Ward Labs adds this, so Ward Labs would be a great opportunity, especially in Nebraska, to send your samples into. But then secondly, there's this at-home test that's available. It's going to be great on fresh material, but it may not give you great results on that dried material because without that durinase being active, you're not going to see that hydrogen cyanide evolve. So it's just something to consider. The at-home test would be great to make sure you're safe before grazing. And then it could also give you ideas, say if you're going to hay it as well, like maybe it's high. And that would give us an idea, okay, maybe we should not be haying that either. Testing is a great opportunity to make sure that we're safe during this time frame, especially during drought. And one other aspect that I think may have happened in the Kansas situation that started this whole path was when we were talking to him, we kind of decided that because most of his field was on a pivot, but we think he just got a hot corner. And so if your field's on a pivot and you have this side piece that's not getting water and is drought stressed, maybe trying to avoid harvesting that at this time because you can get a bale that's hot. So you can have one spot that's hot in that whole 100 bales you made, but that could be enough to do, unfortunately, harm your animals.
Dr. Gress, thanks for your time today. I think this has been really interesting research that you've done. Again, challenged some long-standing, I think, thoughts on the potential of forage sorghum and risk it provides in terms of prussic acid poisoning. So I continue to look forward to the work you will do with this. And especially, I think it's going to be fun to see what this prussic acid-free varieties can do for us in terms of grazing. But also, I think for folks who are west of Iowa border, maybe some fall windrow grazing as well. And so some interesting opportunities with that as a potential forage resource.
Well, thank you for having me today.
Dr. Gress, if folks want to get in contact with you and visit directly, what's the best way to do that?
They can either email me or call me. My email is sgruss@iastate.edu, or my phone number is 515-294-3832.
Well, for more information on the topic that we did talk about in today's DEEF Watch podcast, again, you can contact Dr. Gress. She's at Iowa State University. She's a professor and forage extension specialist there.